more. Baby, it's a line. I chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness, we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. We're going to start off the program with a very, very disturbing report on a new law, SB 107. It's been signed into law in California, and it has to do with abortion, the data collection and protection of abortion, and also gender-changing information and data. But it's more than that. So listen to this Greg Reese report. Very disturbing. And then we've got Alex coming in with the Misinformation Governance Board, followed by Jay Dyer giving us some 20th century into the 21st century about some of these groups and how they marshaled this New World Order together. And then we're going to finish with Alan Watt, and he's going to give us some really, really good additional information, and we'll finish with him. But first, here we go with Greg Reese with this report about this gender and this all this new law, SB 107, out in California. Here we go with him.
This summer, Chloe Cole spoke out against California's passing of SB 107, testifying that both her and her parents were manipulated and bullied by the state to undergo destructive, life-changing surgeries. And while Florida bans puberty blockers and so-called sexual reassignment surgeries for minors, California Governor Gavin Newsom signs a bill allowing children from any state in the country to go to California for transgender medical procedures without parental consent. California is being hailed by the death cult as a transgender surgery sanctuary state, now providing chemical and surgical castrations for all of America's children. According to this new law, California can take emergency jurisdiction over any child from anywhere if there's a disagreement between the parent and the state of California over how to treat a child's gender distress. SB 107 states that taking a child away from the child's parents is justifiable if it is done to pursue gender transition procedures in California, and allows for the state to wage child custody claims against out-of-state parents. SB 107 forbids healthcare providers from providing medical information related to gender identity procedures to a child's parent, even if sought under a subpoena. After permanently mutilating her own adopted child, Kathy Molig has been working full-time for California nonprofit Trans Family Support Services, where she reaches out to hundreds of children all across the country, luring them to California to castrate themselves. She often does so without the parents' knowledge.
I work with a lot of youth before they tell their families, and helping them in shaping what that looks like.
Her work focuses on conservative communities where parents may not approve of having their children castrated.
We have kids coming from all over the country for our virtual groups. We also opened a chapter in Huntsville, Alabama, because the people in red states really need as much support as they can get from us allies, in particular in states like California and Oregon and Washington.
For whatever reason, people are allowing this incredibly evil attack against their own children. And recently, Laura Logan interviewed a UN insider who explained to her why children are the biggest target.
I get it, but I don't get it. the children. You just, you got to, I still have, I have such a problem with this. You got to explain this one to me. And he said, well, first of all, you're looking at it the wrong way. I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, they don't define children the way you do. They don't define the world the way you do. The choices that you face are not their choices, right? They have a, they look at it completely differently. And I said, well, okay, so how do they look at it? And he said, for them, everything is defined by their one fundamental, all-consuming purpose. I said, which is what? He said, to defeat God. For them, the younger you are, the closer you are to God, the more pain they can inflict on God. So the more you can make a baby or a small child suffer, the greater your victory over God. And that is the only consideration for them.
Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Coming up next is Alex with the Misinformation Conference Board. And this is really, really disturbing. So here we go with Alex.
So in the year 2022, it is out in the open that a consortium of leftist think tanks that are really CIA, FBI on record are directing the banks, the universities, big tech, the military, most of the police departments. Soros has put in thousands of DAs and county attorneys. He's got 22 state attorney generals under his control. We talk about death camps. They're building emergency COVID centers all over the world under UN auspices, all to the same specifications. They already sent tens of thousands of old people in New York alone to their deaths on ventilators under orders to kill them. This is all a test for total power and total control. For all intents and purposes, America is dead. The Republic is gone. But unlike a human, when they die, they're dead. A idea or a system can be rebooted or resurrected from the dead. But if you don't admit the country is gone and what's left of it being sacked and looted in a hostile globalist world government takeover, you're a fool. And if you don't recognize that as above, so below, the attacks you see on the wide scale against our infrastructure, our culture, our families, our very lives is directed directly at you and I on the bottom. All right. This is undoubtedly the biggest news since the founding of the country in 1776. And the plan they're running here in America is being duplicated across the world, except for communist China that's even further ahead than us, and our controllers are duplicating what China's done. Now, we have congressional documents. We have leaked documents. We have four-year documents that have all come out in lawsuits and in other ways confirming that under Obama, big tech, big banks, big media with foundations right down to the grassroots have set up spy networks in churches, in businesses, in universities, in charity organizations, so that they have access and placement and access in every facet of life. They're motivated. They believe they're on a winning team. That's why you see the coming out of the pedophilia, the coming out of all of the incredible tyranny is because they have gone operational. They are at war with everybody. And so if you go back to this broadcast 25 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, they were just putting footage on screen from 15 years ago, where we showed you documents and reports where the federal government had infiltrated secretly and taken over most churches, and they give them the scripts of what to say, both Catholic and Protestant. that it's not our government. It's the criminals that are in charge of our government, and they're training them. The constitutionalists, gun owners, Christians, veterans are the enemy, unless they adopt the anti-human culture of the left. So this is a cult. And so the big news here is more documents have been made public, which federal government admits are real, that going back the first week of Biden being put into office 2 years ago, or 22 months ago, within a week of him in office, they had press conferences declaring war on the American people and gun owners and veterans and people that question elections and forced inoculations and the rest of it. But they then set up through a federal office, a secret office of disinformation governance board that still had money in it from when Obama left and put it into the Defense Authorization Act and the Countering Disinformation and Foreign Propaganda Act, but pointed at the American people. The Disinformation Governance Board. Now, in these documents that are also transcripts of the communiques and battle plans, remember they go way further than even this, and this is complete felony, absolutely criminal. They should all be arrested now. But they do even more on the ground because we've been the victim of it. We've learned a lot of intelligence dealing with their operatives on the ground, which, again, every weapon they turn against us, every weapon they use against us shall not prosper. No weapon formed against us shall prosper if we just stay focused, don't quit. With God's help. But this is such a huge issue because this is an authoritarian spy grid takeover. And in the documents, they coordinate the federal government, Homeland Security, with big tech, with banks, with universities, with philanthropic organizations, with everybody. And they give battle plan orders that so the public doesn't know it's the government or Biden or Obama running this, that actually says this, we're going to put you in charge with our case officers that are at the ADL, actually says it, Southern Poverty Law Center, and our agents in the military. They're agents in our military. They know they're like Spectre. This is like a James Bond movie. And even local police. That's why they're purging the police to get the good ones out and put in their people. So this is a total criminal takeover. Now, I'm not at liberty to get into all this right now, but I will at a later date. And I've foreshadowed this before, but we've dealt with at least three waves of attempted infiltrations. And everybody that works here gets contacted by the national media and by these think tanks, and they get offered money. And a lot of the crew sitting there in the control room has been called by, and they've told me. Then they start digging into your past, start trying to threaten you. But you can't be intimidated by this because this is an organized criminal group. And if they win, it's all over for everybody. It's a cult. And where are the Republican leadership on this? They know all about this. If I knew about this 20 years ago, they know about it. If I made films about it 15 years ago, they know about it. Police State 4, my last Police State film, is just about this. And so it's been going on a long time. And at first they built the network saying, oh, it's to stop violent Muslim extremists. That's why I want everybody to be spies in the infrastructure. But just like Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he's putting the sand where the idol is, they took Islam off the lever and they've now moved the American people onto it as the bag of sand. We're the target. The training dummy for the attack dog was the Muslims. But now, as I warned you 20 plus years ago, the real target was always red, white, and blue, hardcore Americans that wouldn't roll over to this criminal takeover. So they're removing bin Laden off of the pedestal and putting us on it as the new target. And of course, the left going along with this, they'll be the next target as well. First they came for Alex Jones, then they came for everybody else. This is a tried and true formulae. I remember under Obama, they hired Marcus Wolf, the former head of the East German Stasi, to come and work with big tech and the federal government to set up the embryonic system of what we're now witnessing. That was in the Washington Post, like it was a good thing. Google in Germany moved into the former headquarters of the Stasi. Can't make this up. They do all this on purpose. So when you listen to this broadcast, you need to understand, I'm not gonzo journalist writing myself into it. I'm their number one enemy because I've been understanding them. When I would have conversations with Trump, and he was telling me, oh, you're a great guy, pat me on the head, like politics, and say, listen, sir, there's a stay-behind network. There's $3 billion in this fund. They've got infiltrators in here in the White House. Here's their names, and here's the people inside running this disinformation operation that's really there to remove you from office. He'd say, very interesting, very interesting. And then all hell broke loose because I gave those reports to the president. We'll be right back. Let's go ahead and play the clergy response team clip. Now, remember, before this became national news, we got the secret documents from pastors who've been recruited by FEMA. We posted the secret documents with FEMA phone numbers. Train your flocks to turn their guns in. Train your flocks to go to FEMA camps. Train your flocks to take forced inoculations. People didn't believe us, just like they didn't believe the MIAC report. Then, suddenly, local news began reporting it, but like it was a good thing. Now, listen, will martial law ever be a reality? And the preachers are there, being paid by the government, faith-based initiative, now continuing under Obama, to tell their flocks to do what they're told by the authorities, and the government's biggest threat is the American people. That's a quote. So, this is specifically the pastors getting ready for us to go to FEMA camps. And there's thousands of pieces of evidence like this, and Glenn Beck saying it doesn't exist. Here it is.
Law ever become a reality in America? Some fear any nuclear, biological, or chemical attack on U.S. territory might trigger just that. And as KSLA News 12 Jeff Farrell discovered, the clergy would help the government with potentially their biggest problem. Us.
From my cold, dead hands.
Charlton Heston's famous declaration captures a truly American value, the overarching desire to protect our freedoms. But gun confiscation is exactly what happened during the state of emergency following Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. U.S. troops also arrived, something far easier to do even now thanks to last year's elimination of the 1878 Posse Comitatus Act. That forbid U.S. troops from policing on American soil. If martial law were enacted here at home, like depicted in the movie The Siege, easing public fears and quelling dissent would be critical. And that's exactly what the clergy response team, as it's called, helped accomplish in New Orleans.
Jeff, the primary thing that we say to anybody is let's cooperate and get this thing over with, and then we'll settle the differences once the crisis is over.
Such clergy response teams would walk a tightrope between the needs of the government versus the wishes of the public.
In a lot of cases, these clergy would already be known in the neighborhoods in which they're helping to defuse that situation.
For the clergy, one of the biggest tools that they will have in helping calm the public down or obey the law is the Bible itself, specifically Romans, Romans 13.
Because the government is established by the Lord. You know, and that's what we believe in the Christian faith. That's what's stated in the scripture.
Civil rights advocates believe the amount of public cooperation may depend largely on how long they expect a suspension of their rights might last.
So they've been beta testing this for a long time. They've got most of the big preachers. They've got almost all the heads of universities. They've got almost all the police chiefs. They've got the Justice Department, the FBI. They've got almost the complete control of big tech and the big telecoms. They've had to purge the military and police to put their people in. And they are infiltrating every facet of society with actual seminars and spy training, starting with Antifa. Now, the Antifa you see on the streets is just the cutouts they pay $20 an hour to be there and carry out violence. But there are professors above them, and then government operatives, and then FBI above them. Came out this year that the FBI was coordinating the Summer of Rage and coordinating Antifa and the murders around the country. So, yes, the government's completely taken over at the top. The few Republicans that aren't completely sold out are scared and isolated and are being physically attacked, and people are coming to their baseball games, shooting them. They are coming after everybody, and they already had their lockdowns. They're planning new lockdowns. They had new announcements today in Australia and in Canada and in the U.S. that they're looking to bring back new lockdowns. We have those clips. But the ultra-massive news is that the ADL, Southern Poverty Law Center, are listed in these government documents, DHS, as the bosses. The Homeland Security, through an InfraGuard system, signs up executives in the private sector, but also in government, to have their own little police identification, federal disinformation board badges. They've got other badges. Start with Infrastructure Protection, InfraGuard, and they talk about all that in here. It's in my film, Police State 3 and Police State 4. It's in those films. And they describe in there how they're then going to have martial law. And you just saw that on local news telling you how great it is. Now, it's of the Lord. And quoting Romans 13 out of context, Hitler's favorite Bible verse. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, to God the things that are God's. Because the Pharisees were trying to set Christ up and saying, hey, you don't want to pay your taxes to the Roman governor? And he said, no, that's his system, that's his coin. It's got his face on it, correct? Render to Caesar what's his, and to God's what's God's. And don't bring Caesar's money into the temple. Separation of church and state. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Let's put the First Amendment on screen. Or the freedom of the press. Or the right of the people to peaceably assemble for a redress of grievances. First Amendment comes out of Jesus' mouth. Go read that chapter in the Bible, in the New Testament. It's in three Gospels. It's important. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedoms of speech or the press or the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's the First Amendment, number one, the most important, after its self-defense, because the founders knew the pen's mightier than the sword, but if they take the pen away, well, you got to draw your sword. I know I'm on the right side of history. I can be an honorable man in the eyes of my ancestors and my peers. But I know why most people roll over to this, because they're up against organized government, offshore, mega corporation crime. And they go scoop up in the universities with the psychological test and programs these people that aren't going to get jobs in the private sector. They're going to get jobs running our lives as our commissars, as political officers over us. And when you read these documents, I'm going to start covering next segment, they're bone chilling. The government says, so they don't figure out we're illegally doing this and controlling big tech and the universities and the schools and the media and running all this, Democrat hijacked government, we will give the directives to our officers and our agents in NGOs. And the NGOs are, as I've told you, the ADL, Southern Poverty Law Center, and the list goes on and on. Black Lives Matter, you name it. So they all wear multiple hats. But your Antifa leaders, your Black Lives Matter leaders, they're all government agents of a hijacked, rogue government state. And they've been promised power and control once this takeover is complete. And they're all around us. They're everywhere. And it's a real problem. But they don't have the moral high ground we do. They're the criminals, not us. Leaked documents outline DHS plans to police disinformation. The Intercept broke the big story. A secret disinformation governance board. Set up for the war on terror, but always for the American people. Chilling conversations uncovered to tell DHS collusion with big tech to censor speech. Town hall. See, you see the corruption on the surface, but it's the tip of the iceberg. But I've been fighting these people for decades. I've been down here in a submarine, and I've seen it, and it's bad. So horrible, it's hard to even admit to myself. Doc show, Facebook, and Twitter closely collaborating with the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, to, quote, police disinfo. Plans to expand censorship on topics like withdrawal from Afghanistan, origins of COVID, info that undermines trust in financial institutions. Tim Pool says this may be the biggest story of our lives. It is. It is our lives. They've taken them over. The direct violation of law and the Constitution on a scale designed to subvert our elections and control the populations. Here's the actual CISA Cybersecurity Advisory Committee that has a secret bureau called the Disinformation Governance Board. You might want to go read this massive document for yourself.
That's some pretty scary stuff, isn't it? We've got a lot that's going on out here. And coming up next is Jay Dyer, and he's going to show us some really, really good. He's going to present some really good information about the 20th century and the 21st century, about how the buildup occurred. And then we'll follow that by Alan Watt. Alan Watt passed away over a year ago, and we certainly do miss him. But we certainly do. But here we go with Jay Dyer.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. And I wanted to talk about how we got to where we are in terms of this revolutionary nihilistic philosophy that has pretty much taken over the West, the elites of the Western world, and how the dogma that has been accepted is pretty much a dogma related to expanding that neoliberal, post-human, technocratic, dystopian order to the whole globe. In order to understand how we got to where we are, it's very important to understand the 20th century, what led to the conflicts of the 20th century. As you know, we've covered in many lectures Dr. Carol Quigley's Tragedy and Hope and his other books like The Anglo-American Establishment, how those texts show the planning behind the Cold War. I'm going to skip World War One and World War Two. I've covered those at length in the past. But particularly the Cold War, which you could say is World War Three, was intentionally set up so that we could have the infrastructure of technocracy built. I'm not saying there wasn't a real Cold War, that people weren't really ideologically battling, but we do have a win on the part of what Quigley calls democratic capitalism that ends the Cold War. But what set up the Cold War, this Iron Curtain, was with the intention at the time of the Cold War to have an American century and an American predominance. And so the reason for the Iron Curtain, for example, comes out of George Kennan and the American century notion or doctrine, where he wrote, quote, this is a declassified document. We have 50% of the world's wealth, but 6% of the population. In this situation, we cannot fail to object to the envy and resentment of the rest of the world, he's saying. Our real task is in the coming period, to devise a pattern of relationships which will permit us to maintain this position of disparity without positive detriment to our national security. To do so, we will have to dispense with all the sentimentality, the daydreaming, and put our attention upon and concentrate upon everywhere our immediate national objectives. We need not deceive ourselves that we can afford this luxury of altruism in this world. So he's basically saying that we're going to have a reality, realpolitik at this Cold War period. And there's analysis given by F. William Ingdahl, where he notes that America's leading post-war planners have been involved in this 1959 War and Peace Studies project of the New York Council on Foreign Relations. In other words, Kennan at the CFR had put this out. This would be part of the guiding philosophy in terms of geopolitics and foreign policy in terms of the United Nations. So this is actually a report given to the United Nations. And the point at this point was to have the architects of a post-war U.S.-dominated global policy. They, however, chose not to call it an empire. Instead, the United States would project imperial power under the guise of a colonial liberation policy. Support for thus democracy and free markets would be central to this projection of power and this extension of empire. Most effectively, it would then combat the diabolical propaganda in terms of what the USSR was putting out. In other words, now we have to fight the war in a new way, the Cold War. But the American century is key because we tend to think, when we hear this, we think of this as what would be in the best interest of the average American citizen. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And I want to be fair. I know, I understand the nuances here, that the Cold War was a reality that was very complex. And in many cases, many people in the intelligence apparatus that were fighting for this, for Western freedom and whatnot, they were fighting on the basis of classical liberal Western ideas, going back to, Roman law, common law, et cetera. And they're fighting on the basis of Halford Mackinder's Heartland, Rimland theory, right? That controlling Eurasia is the key to controlling and having the upper hand in terms of global dominance. When Brooks Adams, for example, is involved in setting a lot of U.S. policy in the 1950s, this was precisely the justification that he had for the American global empire. And that was because at the CFR, they had determined, along with the Mackinder thesis, that you had to control the the Eurasian heartland in order to control the rest of the globe. At the same time, Brzezinski, in his famous Grand Chessboard book, wrote that the United States must, in terms of Eurasia, control this. Eurasia is of the first import for its control of geostrategy. And the purposeful management of this geostrategic dynamic states that, in other words, to put it in a terminology that harkens back to the more brutal age of ancient empires, the three grand imperatives of imperial geostrategy are prevent collusion, maintain security dependence amongst the vassals, and to keep tributaries pliant and protected. This keeps the barbarians from coming together. In other words, this is a quote from Brzezinski, that the American approach is an empire. It's an empire. It's an American imperium, but it's under the guise, it's under the cloak of humanitarian democracy, free markets, etc. And unfortunately, until we recognize the reality of this, the power structure behind the Western imperium is very powerful private families, private interests like the Rockefellers, who do not have it in everyone else's best interest to have an American empire that supports actual Americans. This is what people can't fathom, and this is why we've never really been able to get anywhere in terms of stopping the takeover of our country and our devolving into this collapse that we're now in, is that we've never been able to face up to and recognize who's really running things. The Fortune 100, the Fortune 500 are not, we think of these as a free market. We think of these as entities that are fighting against the regulations of a big government and all that. Well, that is true at a certain degree, at a certain level, but everybody can see nowadays it's completely uncloaked, especially with all of the Fortune 100, Fortune 500 that attend Davos, Bilderberg, et cetera, that they're all on party with the same plan. They're all on the same game plan. They're all party to the same strategy, which is to implement a technocracy that is Malthusian, anti-human, post-human. Now, why do we go back to all that Cold War stuff? Well, today what I want to try to do is chart the course from the end of the Cold War to the rise of the War on Terror to the putting on the back burner of the War on Terror to suddenly now the war on humanity, the war on viruses, the war on whatever the next phase of this global war is. The war became global, not just in World War I and World War II, but also in the Cold War, and that prepared the way for the War on Terror. And the big geopolitical strategists who write about this talk about that. So it's not a conspiracy theory. It's just a fact of the process of geopolitics. And so this is where we got to the point where it's necessary to invade all of these countries, to police the world and whatnot. It's because of the maintenance of a global empire that is not run for American interests. It's a cabal, a clique, that brought American foreign policy back under the sway of interventionism and being the global policeman, being the engine of a secret shadow government. I covered that in the last several talks here in the fourth hour with the Milner book, with the Fabian Society, with talking last week about shadow government and going all the way back to Plato, secret societies and the perfect ideal republic, which is the technocracy. It's modeled on Plato's republic. And so that same inner secret cabal running things with a shadow puppet governmental front of elected leaders is precisely how the Western world is run. And we are still at a stage when people cannot figure this out. I had a conversation with somebody who was talking about a very prominent figure, and this prominent figure, who's very intelligent, is just so terrified of talking about the notion of, quote, conspiracy. Well, why would we think that, quote, conspiracy is something abnormal when, if you read even just history, let's not talk about geopolitics, let's talk about history. Isn't history full of conspiracy, courtly intrigues? Well, absolutely. History is full of assassinations and wars and spies and espionage. It's all across everybody's history. So the norm in history is actually conspiracy. It's not abnormal, but we live in a day when the population is so dumbed down that they don't even know American history. They can't find America on a map. But we have to know these things if we're going to figure out the solution to what we're really up against. Don't go anywhere. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're charting the history of the 20th century up to today, which got us to this disastrous place of the emergence, the uncloaking of the technocratic post-human world order. And I'm charting that course from the Cold War to the War on Terror to where we are now. And after the Cold War, as the Cold War began to wind down, when we had entities like Harvard and the economists out of Harvard and studies that were done in the RAND Corporation preparing for the sort of dissecting and looting of Russia, which occurred in the 1990s. This was actually covered, I think, in some congressional inquiries in the 1990s. The Harvard crew that went in and sort of divided up Russia and a lot of the resources, privatized it. This was through collusion with a lot of former KGB colonels, as well as Russian mafia individuals, some of whom Putin later arrested and sort of deported. And that has a lot to do with today's drama when it comes to Russia. I'm not going to go into all that, but if you don't know, of course, the RAND Corporation was founded in concert with the Air Force under Curtis LeMay. That's who's lampooned in Dr. Strangelove. Then we have the under JFK, a lot of studies being done in terms of the Cold War via RAND. And by the time we get to Brzezinski, who helps to basically end the Cold War and bring the Soviet Union to a halt, to a collapse, this is done through the Afghanistan operation when Brzezinski utilizes the Mujahideen as a way to bog down Russia in the Soviet conflict there. And this leads to further pressure on Russia, or the Soviet Union, I should say. And as we said, when the wall falls, when the Soviet Union collapses, the IMF is who really is the key player here to come in with these Harvard economists and to divvy up and loot the country. And so this was done as a kind of privatization, personal, private, corporate debt restructuring, you could say, to try again to further dismantle and destroy this country. And this is no different, actually, than what we saw in World War One and World War Two, when, according to Dr. Quigley, you had a lot of these elite planners, a lot of these people that came in and restructured these countries after the wars to be in an IMF World Bank debt model. And we saw the IMF World Bank, those are Fabian institutions that are intended ultimately to bring about a kind of Fabian socialism, which is not anti-capitalist, but united with monopoly capital. This is what helps us understand the last few months of news when it comes to Ukraine and the Nord Stream pipeline, because it turns out the pipeline battles are a huge issue, a key factor in a lot of this, because in terms of the New World Order from the Western Atlanticist perspective, this is about the control of energy and the control and dominance of resources. And so a lot of times when we hear about the human rights abuses and the need to go into these various countries for human rights abuses, it turns out that was a cloak for Western black ops, Western operations, ultimately as serving private interests. So this doesn't benefit us average Americans. The fact that a private corporation is getting access to a market isn't really helping us out. It's only helping out those private interests. And I'm not a socialist. I'm not saying that we should nationalize all the oil or anything. It doesn't work that way. it's more of a bigger power play. And if it was really about the resources in terms of, you know, if we were told, well, we have to get those resources because we need it for our country because we use so much oil, we're overextended. But then why does Biden shut down pipelines? Why does Biden shut down American oil? So this is just a further level of excuse for these foreign escapades to go into these other countries. And it's not even in the long, long term about getting the oil. That's a big piece of this. That was a big part of Desert Storm and all that as well. And it's a big part of who's going to give, you know, put their pipeline and their oil and their natural gas and all that into the Ukraine servicing Europe, right? And so the pipeline battle is a big part of it, but even that isn't really the end goal. The end goal here goes beyond entities like Halliburton and the different contractors and Raytheon and Boeing and all the military industrial complex. It actually goes to a long-term game of bringing about a full-on global technocracy. And a lot of people think that in order to get to that stage, to shut off, you know, it's necessary at this phase to shut off Russian energy, Russian oil throughout that corridor, and eventually bring about a giant global conflict. Now, I don't know whether that'll happen. A lot of people think it might happen. It's very necessary. People think that what's going on now might trigger that. People thought that when that we had the South Ossetia war crisis, in 2010, somewhere in there. And so I don't know what will cause this. People thought, oh, it'll be North Korea. Oh, it'll be China. Who knows? But in my view, it's very possible that given what we have in State Department Memorandum 200, which is an official document under Nixon through Henry Kissinger to accept population control first on the third world, but also eventually in the domestic population. So they, we know that the eventual goal is to have a drastic reduction in global population. And we know that that could come about through global war, but it also might come about through other means, new viruses, new releases, this kind of stuff. Monkeypox, Ebola, whatever, right? COVID-2300, whatever the next instantiation of the mutation of COVID might be. Any of those things might be the way to eventually reduce the population. Because remember, population is also a human resource, according to the global elite. And they believe that eventually the human resource of human population will no longer be needed. And in fact, that they're just something in the way of progress. And so the reduction of the population down to 90-95%, in other words, getting rid of 95% is an actual government project and policy. Now, I don't think Kissinger's documents say, I want to kill 95% of the world. But other people in government, other people who are advisors and consultants do have that philosophy, do have that view. And we have to understand that that's the overall objective. That's never going to change from the vantage point of these people. They really have adopted that Malthusian perspective. It's the official philosophy of the United Nations, which is one of the Fabian institutions that these people put together, the Rockefellers especially, in concert with the Milner-Fabian group. That philosophy of UNESCO, according to Gillian Huxley, who wrote the philosophy of UNESCO, is a drastic reduction in the world's population by any and all means. So the real reason for the pushing of the sexual confusion, degeneracy, all of this stuff, isn't about anyone's rights. It's about the population. The real reason for going into these countries, aside from the control of resources and energy, isn't really about anyone's rights. It's not even ultimately about the control of resources, although that is a key important factor here. It's about the eventual drastic reduction of population. So again, people on our side who analyze this stuff that are called conspiracy theorists, we don't know the exact means by which they're going to play all these cards or try to bring this about. It might be global war, and there's a good possibility that we could see World War III or World War IV, to be specific. It could kick off as a result of this conflict. Who knows? I don't think that Putin wants that. But I also feel like, you know, with biolabs and all the information that came out about the biolabs in Ukraine, that Russian and the several years, 8 years or so of attacks on that border, they felt the necessity to make this move, whether you think it was a wise move or not. That was the reason for it. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to look at the global conflict.
This is getting pretty tough out there to report these days. But coming up next, we're going to end the program with this. Is Alan Watt, And he tells us of such a wide breadth of, gets back into the English system, the British world order, the New World Order promulgated by the British. But here we go with Alan Watt. We'll finish with him, and then we'll have the exit music, and that'll be the end of this first hour. But thank you for being with us this evening. God bless each and every one of you.
Alan is an author, radio host, and deep researcher into the New World Order's long-term strategy of eugenics and more.
I'm Alan Watt, and I've been following politics and geopolitics for a good part of my life. I didn't start off deliberately going out to find out everything that was possibly going on. In fact, I had no idea, to be honest with you, how vast the scale of an agenda, political agenda, is when you're bringing in a global society. Wars have many different purposes. Economics is only simply one big part of it, but cultural change and the building of empire through the defeated nations joining in leagues. Every country was basically signing the same laws, and had been in my whole life, at the same time that affected their societies. Laws were introduced and bills were introduced unbeknownst to the people in those countries that it was being introduced in their neighboring countries or even across the water somewhere at the same time. I realized there was already a governmental control, obviously, that coordinated all of this. And it led me into the United Nations. For every single department of government you have on a federal, local, county, state, provincial level, the United Nations had an equivalent department to deal with everything. It was already set up, in fact, to be global government. H.G. Wells said that the League of Nations, which was the embryo for the United Nations, he said, this is the nucleus of the world governments, when eventually all laws will come from there, be passed and signed into law by treaty of all the member countries. Eventually, we won't even have to go through the farce, and that's what it is, of voting in parties or candidates, because in the latter part of the 20th century and now into the 21st century, we're being trained, rather obviously, to simply accept rule by experts, ruled by scientists, ruled by professionals, and that's what they mean when they call governance. That's the term used. How do you get a domesticated herd to move from a field, a system in which it's been grazing for 20, 50 years, this kind of system, to this field over here, this new field? Because we have reluctance to change. We like familiarity, we're like routine, you see. You do it by various techniques, one of which is revolution. Most revolutions are bloodless. You have cultural revolutions, sexual revolutions. Along with that comes the music revolutions, etc. These literally are designed to alter and direct culture, knowing what kind of culture they'll have at the very end of it too. They know exactly what kind of culture they want to come out of it. You also can do it through crisis creation. Crisis after crisis has been hit on the people of the world since 9/11 happened. And we must understand that the techniques that are used abroad are also used at home in warfare. And we heard the term shock and awe. Shock and awe on the hard force level, as they call it, is bombs, all kinds of acoustic equipment to nullify enemies, scare the hell out of them through voice to skull and so on, which was used in Gulf War I, and it's all over the British media. But you can also use shock and awe on your domestic people again. You do it by crisis after crisis until the public are so terrified. See, the average person has a sort of confidence that they build up where they think I can manage most things that come my way. Whatever little crisis in my life, what happens to other people, I can deal with. When all those around you are getting scared at the same time as you because they're losing their jobs, they've been threatened with pandemics, terrorists everywhere, terrifying people to even get on subways, and so on. and all those around you, as I say, are also in the same boats, you tend to be more easily directed by the powers that be that come out and speak with authority and confidence over you. That's why they give you a guy like Obama, who's trained in oratory. He was trained in oratory, not in truth, but in oratory, the technique of persuasion. Shock and awe, as I say, is a technique of making a person and a whole population punch drunk. And each one of those fears, you see, you understand, the average person can handle one major crisis in their personal life, maybe two at the same time. It's understood in psychology and many, many studies that if you have maybe three to four crises hitting you personally in your life at the same time, you will literally go into an incredible depression, a reactive depression you can't cope. That's understood. Apply that technique on a whole population. The thing is, there's not one of these crises that we're being told about that you personally can do anything about. What can you do about terrorism if it really exists all over the place? It's out of your hands, you're helpless. What can you do about a coming pandemic? It's out of your hands, you're helpless. What can you do about a nuke getting set off in New York Harbor or wherever? You can't, you're helpless. The message you're getting is that you're utterly helpless to defend, help, or save yourself. That is complete shock and awe tactic that's been used not only in the US and Canada, but across the world. Same strategy, because we're already global with the global society running us all. Massive psychology and warfare techniques in psychology has been used across the planet to make us succumb to fear and crises, as I say, and none of which we can actually do anything about on an individual level. Therefore, the leaders are presented to us on screen with uniforms or business suits and ties as politicians who speak with confidence, all scripted, of course, and they seem to have everything under control. You're now basically a fearful slave looking up to the powerful master to defend and protect you. That's the simple technique of it. I've been speaking about the Rockefeller Foundation. I was mentioning the fact that in the United States, the Rockefeller Foundation, which also runs, I think it is the Carnegie Foundation today, maybe even the Ford, they're all combined. And the families that are given the intergenerational rights, if you like, or authority to lead the world to amalgamation under global governance. Mr. Rockefeller also is heavily involved in the world depopulation strategies. He funds abortion clinics across the planet. He also funds hundreds of other front foundations that you would think were independent from his, but they're actually front foundations. He funds them all through his money. You can trace them all back again to so-called family planning clinics across the entire globe, especially in the third world countries. It seems that Mr. Rockefeller is intensely worried about overpopulation in the near future from countries which will have no industry, etc., and he sees it as his right to start the decimating process, basically, of depopulation. Last winter, I got an invitation to attend something called the World's Citizenship Council, the annual meeting. That kind of floored me because the head of the World Citizenship Council is Mr. Rockefeller himself. And here I am speaking out about and against them. So this did not come out of the blue. They try and get you on board working for them. What was also more startling was they always give members maybe 15 minutes or 20 minutes to speak, and I was offered that to speak on stage to this world meeting. The world's citizenship idea is part of the old idea of Cecil Rhodes up into Lord Milner to the Royal Institute for International Affairs and the Council on Foreign Relations. Mr. Rockefeller is up on Google in some of his conferences giving out world citizenship awards to very famous people. So they've already bypassed and have bypassed sovereign nations a long time ago. What other benefits you get from being a world citizen, I'm not certain at all. But I was allowed, he said I'd be allowed to speak at this conference. He did not say what to speak about, or didn't say anything what not to speak about. And he also said that this chairman, of course, wrote to me, he also said that I'd be allowed to participate in the round table groups which come after. The Round Table Society is very, very important because the Round Table Societies were set up as far back as the Milner Society and the Rhodes Foundation. They came out with the first Round Table Societies. What they do is take the topics that are discussed at the main meetings, then they split off at different tables to specialize in certain aspects of the speeches they've heard and find ways how to implement them into reality through media, promotion, various methods of propaganda and so on. I did not attend. I was tempted to go just to see if they would ask me not to speak about certain things. But it was the middle of winter, and the journey to this university would have been pretty hectic anyway, and I was so busy. But you will be approached, and that's not the first time I've been approached to do this kind of thing. You'll find that some people are bought over. I should go back to Lord Bertrand Russell on this topic, because Lord Bertrand Russell said in one of his own books, the same book, in fact, where he talks about those children who managed to escape the indoctrinations, who have intelligence and an ability to communicate to others, must be brought on board the system, employed by the system, bribed into the system if possible. That generally works with most people. He said, otherwise we shall have to eliminate them, because they did not want people around who understood an agenda that the general public are unaware of. Didn't want these people with the ability to communicate information, documented information, in a fashion that people understand out in the community where they could spread this word. That ties in with Mao Zedong, who said he was not afraid of armies. His worst fear was someone with a good idea, a great idea, a unique idea, and the ability to communicate it. So that is how they treat, basically, people with information. First comes invitation to join them. Many people do. As I say, Bertrand Russell backed that up by saying if they can't be brought on board, they must be literally eliminated from the public arena. That's how seriously they take this agenda at the top. They don't mess it around. The reason I think they don't simply come out and kill you straightforward is they don't have to do a messy job. There's many ways of killing you, especially in this day and age. But I think, to be honest, they're so arrogant right now at this moment. They're not too worried about the mass of the general population who are indoctrinated and updated with indoctrination daily from television, as one example. About 100 years ago, this big organization with many branches, they wanted to rule the world, basically using Britain as a nucleus of a system, an embryo, which also was going to be joined with the US under the Anglo-American establishment, wrote about the kind of culture and the changes of culture over a 100-year period that they would actually design. We're all tribal to an extent. That's why we even bother to vote for a tribal leader. This is well understood. That's why we're supplied with these leaders. And because the average man was to become more disengaged from his own destiny as the expert class arose, it was decided that the males would get their outlet, basically, gradually becoming helpless as males, through sports. Therefore, they'd have a tribal team they could identify with, they could cheer them on as they were winning. In their own personal lives, they were getting nowhere. They were getting disenfranchised, in a sense, as experts took over decision-making for them in all kinds of fields. So this was psychology at use, planned before they even implemented the sports. When radio came along, of course, they used that to the maximum. Sports for the men, radio soaps basically for the women, and then in came television, as I say, with its alpha state, its hypnotic state. It took off. It really, really took off.